Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport and the Chelsea Fan Show with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Jonathan Kidd and Dan Silver. I'm Matt Beadle. We'll be with you through to 8 p.m. this evening. And I've got to say that a certain man who isn't here by the name of Stamford Chidge is going to be furious that we've started the show with that music.
Because he likes the Liquidator, doesn't he?
He does.
To start it off with, yeah.
He's not going to be happy about that.
He won't. Well, you know, he'll probably ring in and tell us.
Mixed up a little bit.
Well, the Chidge is away, the mice will play.
Oh, there we go, when the Chidge is away. And listen, guys, speaking of away and being away, Chelsea were away last week. First victory of the season, first Premier League win for Frank Lampard. Great result.
Yeah, very good result. Tough game, but great result. I think it's a real building block for us. You know, we get in two soft goals, got the win, held out, Tammy scored. It's a very slow process, isn't it, John?
There were very many positives to be had from that,
wasn't
it? Particularly for me, the performances of Kovacic and Jorginho and Mason Mount, and also Pulisic is really, I think...
He's showing some great signs. Yeah, he's got some real skills.
He's a real skillful player.
Who would have thought releasing players from shackles and making them play really well? Because, you know, you don't play for Real Madrid, you don't play for Napoli, you don't aren't wanted by Pep if you're not a decent footballer. When Sarri's tactics are so rigid, you can't really express yourself. Whereas Frank's a bit gung-ho, but
interesting.
It's great.
I was intrigued by Kovacic's very first performance for Chelsea under Sarri, where he was terrific and seemed to be all over the pitch, was clearly something that Sarri hated.
Yeah.
And then put the straitjacket on immediately after that.
He went from an extendable lead to a short lead.
That's what he did. Yeah. He did after that, because he was fantastic when he first
played. He's a technically very good player.
Yeah, yeah.
As is Jorginho.
It's nice to see them. I felt that on about 30 minutes, there was a Jorginho chant. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And it was I felt quite emotional about it, because considering the terrible...
The vitriol.
There was a bloke, I remember, when he came on towards the worst excesses of the Sarri season, who... almost as if he was an emperor in the Colosseum, put his thumb down when Jorginho was substituted and just stood around in his Peaky Blinders hat, this bloke, with his thumb down.
Looking for validation.
And to actually have this being done, and you thought, there are some discerning fans there who have appreciated that he's done what he said he'd do, which he said, I'm not tied to Sarri, and he's come out, and it's clearly a class act. And I thought that chant was absolutely brilliant.
And he said to me, "I want to be Chelsea Jorginho, not Sarri Jorginho," as well.
Absolutely.
I think the away fans are probably a very good barometer for the true feelings of the club, because they go home and away week in, week out. They're probably the real hardcore of the fans, and I think when they start booing and stuff like that, you know, there's a problem. But I think it was great to see, got behind him, and the problem with Kovacic is, though, how on earth do you get a song for him?
Indeed, but I was thinking whether you do a cough or something very peculiar, which you start up on your own and nobody pays any attention to you whatsoever.
Is that tied to anything, kiddo, or is that just something straight off the top of your head?
That, funnily enough, was straight off the top of my head. You could tell there.
Need some work.
But there was something I was thinking. What was it? I don't know what that is.
What about?
Not La Cucaracha.
I tweeted, we need a song for the cover. Like we need a song for Ramirez. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
We need something, because, Matteo, that one doesn't work. No, all the kind of standard songs you want to do.
But if you hope there'll be one that somebody will come
up
with.
As long as it's not
LA. But it will be that appalling moment where some poor chap starts off a song and nobody pays any attention to him. I was actually present when Thiago got his song. At Crystal Palace.
Yeah,
the bloke stood up. It was actually a fantastic moment. The bloke stood up on a chair with a piece of paper and he sang, Thiago, he comes from Portugal, he hates the Arsenal. Yeah. And that song was then sung for the rest of the game. And that was the game that
Drogba's first goal from Babiola.
What I loved as well was the attempts of the security guys wandering up and down to get this bloke to stand down off the chair, and he would not. It just went on and on and on, and everybody joined in, and it was fair enough, because it was obviously an obvious song, but nonetheless, it was there was a kind of joy. This is the first time we've ever sung this, yeah. So it'd be nice to come up with something.
It takes a very brave man to do that, so you have to applaud him.
But it takes a very brave man even to start a song off. I was next to a song starter upper at a West Ham game once. I remember, and this bloke was just, you know, he'd go. He was trying it out. Zika, and he's waiting for somebody to go oi, oi, oi near him, and there's silence, you know. And so he goes.
There's a bit of urban myth about Chelsea song, you know, the Carefree song. It will in full speed, and this woman turns around and goes, "Excuse me, who's Jeffrey?" Wearing that, I was like, oh, okay, yeah.
It's incredibly political, though, isn't it? I imagine it's probably the same at Chelsea. A few football clubs I've been to, singing is quite political, and there is an ownership amongst a certain section of fans who are like, no, we start the songs here. And sometimes if someone's a bit brave, or they've had a few too many and they're not with that contingent, and they start one off, they might get a few followers in and around them, but the singing section don't like it.
Well, I don't really see that when I'm away with the fans.
Away fans is different.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Home fans is kind of like you get, you know, Matthew Harney will sing something, the Shed will sing something. East End, well, they just eat their pies.
We don't do anything.
You just eat the venison pies.
No, there are some that I listen to and I think, I like that one. One of my favourites really is You Are My Chelsea, My Only Chelsea, You Make Me Happy. But only because I like the na 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 na. I like the bit, I always go, ooh. Very, very, you know, even if I'm in the East Stand on my own and, you know, no, I'm the only person singing.
For those who can't see Jonathan Kidd right now, his facial expressions, real menace.
Yeah, no, it wasn't menace, it was joy.
Oh, okay, right.
That's my joyous expression. Menace is, would be that.
You can't see his eyes for sunglasses.
Take the glasses off.
Oh, hello.
The Kovacic chant, to be fair, if anyone listening, if you've got an idea for a Mateo Kovacic chant, get in touch with us, 0208 7020 558 or on the socials at Love Sport Radio. Go on, kiddo.
Oh, Kovacic.
I like that.
That's a potential.
Your old Mateo. That does work, but the pronunciation is a bit weird. Kovacic. Doesn't really work.
That was terrible, the one I suggested. It was
Kovacic. Kovacic. What's that Changes song?
It's not bad. Yeah,
tough.
Kovacic. That's how you pretty things. Yeah, perhaps not.
To go through my song list on the way home.
Yeah, song list. That's right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. We could do Lovely Day. Oh, Kovacic. Yeah. Just keep it going. Okay. You know, perhaps not.
Yeah. No. We're going to move on.
Let's move on.
If anybody does have any ideas, do let us know. We're going to move on to Tammy Abraham.
Yeah.
Now he got off the mark. That first goal, by the way, beautifully taken. 21 years old and 326 days. Third youngest player to score a brace in the Premier League for Chelsea. Can you name the other two? We always like a quiz on this show.
What, Mark Nichols?
Yep.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Very good.
And
Premier League this is. So, yeah, Mark Nichols was one. The other one is
academy player.
It was Eddie Newton. There we go.
Tottenham away.
Oh. Dan Silva. Tottenham away. You are correct.
I was there. Because it was Porterfield was the manager. I couldn't believe it that we'd won.
He played him up front,
and
didn't
Bobby
he?
Stewart passed to him. I
and
didn't know
Sol
it was called
Campbell scored his first Spurs goal in that game as well. Interesting fact.
Yeah, bloody hell. I
remember that. I remember Sol Campbell because he was playing in a more advanced role.
He was playing a striker as well.
Was he?
Yeah, he was Solzier at the time, not Sol.
There we go.
Yeah.
He was what?
Solzier. His full name is Solzier Campbell.
Oh, he was called Solzier.
Apologies for the pronunciation.
Solomon.
Solzier.
So that's how he was announced as a player in that game.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, I'll tell you what, if you want the knowledge, speak to Dan Silva and Tammy Abraham, those two goals. So good to get him off the mark.
And interestingly, it was a Dave cross. It was Aspu, who I've been very rude about from his crossing, but it was a lovely move.
And the way Tammy kind of just stepped back to make space and just. And both his goals were brilliantly taken. The second goal really well taken. He's looking at play. I mean, I was listening to Pat Nevin on a podcast, and he's been there a long time, and Tammy just lives and breathes football. He's got the most fantastic attitude. He's like Lampard. He's always staying on beyond for finishing, training. He and Mason Mount are great role models for anybody who wants to make it.
It fits the whole... what Frank appears to be trying to play, Tammy fits more easily than El Beardo, because he seems to...
He's more mobile.
It's the mobility that is absolutely necessary.
Making more runs in the channels to make space. Giroud wouldn't have got that third goal.
No.
It's not his game. But then Giroud played well.
He came on. Yeah. He's a different sort of player. Once we know that, he's going to be deflecting. And he's going to be holding the ball up much more.
And a great you know, like, and he, like was, Drogba.
He got the referee got that one right. The VAR got the decision when he did back into Krul for Zuma's goal, but the rest of it was a farce. Oh, are we getting onto that in the script? The VAR.
No, we're not going to talk about VAR, kiddo. I'm afraid it is not on the agenda. No, we are not. I'm fed up with giving it airtime. Okay. Because anything I say or do, it's not going to make any difference.
But can we not talk about the risible display from Atkinson? And,
yeah, but that's, I'm sorry, referees have been...
And Mariner at the other end.
Yeah, but VAR's made no difference. The quality of referees in the Premier League has been on a downward spiral for a very long time.
Isn't it going to be even worse if one of the referee at Stockley Park is Mariner?
If it's a foul, it can be minimal contact. Doesn't mean to be... There's not a line that says it's got to be 60% contact. If there's contact, there's a foul. You know, and they do. They're raising the bar. Well, why are you raising the bar? If it's a mistake, it's a penalty. The whole point of what I thought was VAR was to say, oh, actually, Andre Mariner, you got that wrong. That is a penalty. They call it back as a penalty. Anyway, VAR, obviously,
we're not talking about it. No, I'm sorry.
Goal line technology is where it should have ended.
100%. Yeah, and the VAR buck stopped with me after the Super Cup, which you mentioned on a previous show, kiddo, and the fact that Adrian was off his line and it didn't get given. Mm. And people can't go, oh, okay, well, there you go. They got no. With VAR, you've foregone the right to say, oh, they made a mistake. With VAR, everything has to be
absolutely
correct. And that wasn't correct. Because they were celebrating, they thought, crikey.
Yeah, we can't do anything about it.
We can't do anything now.
Absolutely.
We can't say, oh, guys, by the way, sorry, you've got to retake
it. It would have been very funny, though.
Oh, it would have been absolutely brilliant. But, I mean, I hate VAR, so I wouldn't have enjoyed it.
I just think it's
a shambles. You can't.
No, I just wanted to say, I think it's gone into a different world when the two people who are involved in the VAR are two of the worst referees in the division, which is what happened in that game.
You always going to get that anyway because they alternate, don't they? Biggest issue is if there's a mistake, there's a mistake. Yeah, it's a mistake. You give the penalty. I don't care about the referees. They didn't see it. It's a penalty. And all this always getting evidence itself out.
Well, in cricket they don't have a problem with overruling and saying you got it wrong, but they clearly do.
Like they do the crickets watching the last day of the test. It was like, oh, okay, you hear the fourth umpire talking and explaining what he's doing. Can I see this? Can I see that?
Yeah,
that's fine because people don't know in the ground, no idea what's going on.
No
idea because you can't get Wi-Fi for love nor money anymore because everyone's on
Wi-Fi.
Or like they do in American football, when the appeal, you throw a flag on if you think there's an unjust.
In NFL, you do. Yeah, I've had a note from our producer, Josh, who has reminded me that during the Women's World Cup, the English FA did say they weren't going to use VAR to check if keepers were off their lines on pens. Now, Josh, that's fine. Firstly, this is a Super Cup, so not affiliated to the FA. And secondly, this is my problem with VAR, is that we have the video technology. So even if you say, oh, we're not going to use it for that, we can then look at the video, the replay, and people will go, well, hang on, if we've got it there, why don't we use it? So once you start it, you're creating an issue altogether.
So basically, goal line technology is black and white. It's either over the line or it's not. As it's been proved, VAR is subjective. Was it a foul for me? Yes. A foul for him? No. It's black and white decisions only, like with goal line technology. That's the best issue. Should have stopped it at that. And then listen, refs make mistakes. They're human. So what?
Yeah, they do make mistakes. And we did say we weren't going to talk about VAR. All we've done is talk about VAR.
I think we've given it a nice little...
We've rounded it off.
Involving the fact that... Dave was chopped to the ground, obviously, and there should have been a penalty. But apart from that, Chelsea's performance was outstanding, except for the two goals, of course, they conceded.
In between the lines.
And we will move on to that after this. Love Sport. Yeah, this is Love Sport and the Chelsea Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Jonathan Kidd and Dan Silver. He missed it. Too busy on his phone. First time ever on this show, Jonathan Kidd has not gone kiddo when I've said his name.
Kiddo.
He missed it. I'm going to never let you forget that, Mr. Kidd. Now, we want to talk youth because this is a big deal to come out of last week. Chelsea's lineup, starting lineup, average age of 24 years and 208 days. Youngest in the Premier League since February 94. A big, big deal with that. We've spoken about Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount as well coming to the fore.
Yeah, Mason's looking really good. I mean, the way he took that goal was very Frank Lampard-esque, late into the box. Brilliant finish, made space. He's looking a really good player. He's got one of these players. He's got the desire, the hunger. Yeah. He's learned his trade. Because I think his dad wanted to take him away from Chelsea at one point. He goes, no, I'm going to stay on my place. And the year with Frank has really helped him because I think Frank knows exactly what his strengths are.
But he played him in a different position, though, and he still managed, didn't he? Because the whole thing was thrown up in the air because Pedro was injured in the warm-up. And he brought in Barkley, which that actually helped put the average age down.
But the pressure he put on for the Leicester goal on the defender, and then the way he just created space and then absolutely smashed
clearly
it.
Clearly a class act. Clearly,
yeah, he's a very good player.
And I've been bemused by people putting forward teams they would pick when Odoi and Cheek are back and Rüdiger, and Mount doesn't get in. And you think, no, what do you
he
have?
He will do.
Of course he will. But I don't understand why people think, you know, immediately that somehow that these players have precedence. They haven't been playing. It's that thing about people not playing somehow get bigger in stature even because of their past reputation.
Ruben
he's been completely fantastic. You then make it work around Mount because Mount's been so good.
And Ruben's going to say because of his sheer size and physique. Yeah, it's taken him a long time to get back up to speed as well. Yeah. I think Barkley might be collateral damage in that. I think if... potentially.
Well, we had a discussion last week about the number of times that Barkley was caught in possession.
Yeah.
And he was caught in possession again, twice. But then, weirdly, in the second half, was much, much better. He did a fantastic Maisie run where he beat five players across and laid it off to Dave, whose shot was blocked. But I don't know what happens to Barkley. He seems to... He dithers. There's a dithering quality to him, which he... When he plays forward and goes forward, you think, this is a class act.
Yeah. But he doesn't have to think about it. So he becomes like reactionary rather than you know.
Yeah.
Because he's a very, very good player. Listen, he was a you know, a risk at 15 million. But now you think if you sell him, he's a £40 million player to someone, isn't he?
Oh, definitely.
If we do sell him. So I think he might be collateral damage next season if we, you know, if Mount carries on and Loftus-Cheek and so on. Kovacic, because Kovacic is young, Jorginho's young. So we've got quite a young midfield. So one or two has to go, then maybe it'll be Barkley.
It's just the defence which is still slightly the problem. It's not being able to deal with the counter-attack.
No. Well, the problem was like the Pookie goal was like in between two defenders, and you think, well, because he's running from midfield, no one from midfield sort of come back to pick up on the striker making the run to the box. He got in between, who was it? I can't remember now, Christensen and...
Zuma,
yeah.
I would say the thing with the Pookie goal as well, and I raised this with our resident goalkeeper expert, Richard Lee, and said that those types of goals really aggravate me because whilst it was a good run and whilst the through ball was good and he was there to get his shot in, Timu Puku, who's had a great start to the Premier League, of course, I feel like Kepa could have done better there. I feel like in those scenarios, and you see these goals a lot, so I'm not just blaming Kepa on his own. I'm blaming a lot of goalkeepers where Puki hasn't had to do much. He hasn't had to be crafty with his shot. He's literally just hit it towards goal. And Kepa has come out and he's not quite got his spread right. And he's managed to get a parry to it.
Isn't
and it's bobbled
the fear,
over the line.
Fear.
Strong wrists.
Yeah.
Isn't it the fear, though, that they're going to be beaten on the near post? Isn't that what happens with the goalkeeper? Is they're covered, so they're slightly off balance when the shot is played. I always think that's kind of the...
If you get beaten by the
area that the embarrassment area for the goalkeeper.
Yeah, but well, the cliche embarrassment area that we always hear goalkeepers shouldn't be beaten on their near post. Why? Not necessarily. That doesn't always make sense.
Chet was quite often beaten by his left-hand post, wasn't he?
And he was caught in between. You either come or you stay, and he sort of half came and then and just didn't, like you said. And this has been labelled at Kepa before in terms of his wrist, not actually being able to parry strong enough. We saw in the Super Cup that evidently he has got strong wrists with that double save that he made. But I just think that he could have done better on that
definitely.
Occasion.
Absolutely, definitely. Mm. And it was, I think, one of the only... You know, they had two shots practically in the game. They had that header from Godfrey hit the bar after he'd done a run, and they had a volley a bit later on. Other than that, I think they had four shots on target, Norwich, and practically the whole of the game. It was so biased towards Chelsea, and yet they score two of them.
Yeah. And that is something that will, of course, be addressed when Rüdiger comes back. You can imagine that changing. But in terms of the youth you're talking about there and the young midfield that you've got, arguably now one of the most exciting young midfields in English football. And it's funny that...
That's only after four games.
Exactly. You get the knee-jerk reaction after one game, after that Man United loss, and everyone thought, Mount's probably not up for it. Tammy Abraham, we're not sure about him. Yeah. And a few weeks later, that narrative is changing.
I think it's because they were poor in the second half. That was the trouble.
But they're young lads who haven't played top-flight Premier League properly for a long time. I mean, we know that Abraham had that spell with Swansea. It wasn't quite the right time for him. But he's now scored, 28 goals over the past two seasons?
He's got 60 goals in 115 championship matches or something, which is a phenomenal record.
Is better than any English striker.
Yeah, and Swansea was just a bad meal, and they changed managers. They were struggling.
It was a bad time.
Yeah, bad time. But I think he's done well at Villa and Bristol City.
I still think that the media wolves will be out in force if Saturday's a draw.
So be it. I mean, you know, everyone goes on about this. What about Phil Foden at Man City? He barely gets a look in. You know, Pep says you're the best player in the world when you're playing Macclesfield in the Cup. We're giving English youth players a chance.
It's interesting that we
fantastic.
Are playing Macclesfield in the Cup, which is coming up. And of course, and I hope that he plays Gilmore.
Oh, Billy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Billy Goatmore.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the Carabao Cup, gents? Is this something that you want to focus on? Do you think that Lampard's got his eyes on silverware?
There's nothing we don't want to focus on.
Chelsea have
always
gone for stuff. I mean, even going back, you know, the last 20 years, we've always focused on Cups. We haven't really disrespected it. Hence the reason we've won 6 FA Cups, 4 League Cups. And done well. You think these kids winning a trophy within the first year as a team, what that would do to the morale, to everything. Like, you know, Jose said the first trophy he won was a League Cup against Liverpool, and that set the standard for.
But they've been winning
success
as well, haven't they, these boys? They've been winning the Youth Cup.
Yeah, but to win a...
I know, but it's not as if they've not won anything. No, they've had that element of success.
It's a very good opportunity to get silverware.
Yeah.
Very good. And we, you know, we...
But I don't think he ever would ever play a team that was... From the past, what they've done is he'll play youth to start off with, but he'll make sure the bench has got all the proper players
on it. So saying play the kids. You're playing Mason Mount, Tammy Abraham. You're playing the kids anyway, so it's fine.
But it's just a question of whether he gives... who else is there? Gilmore and...
I mean, it's a nice home match to play some other players.
Is James supposed to be available by then?
James is fit. Yeah. Tomorrow get a game.
Yeah.
Gilmore probably get a game.
Yeah.
Might see Michi get a game. So yeah, so it's a nice game to have at home.
Indeed. And speaking of silverware, Champions League draw, gents, kicks off 17th of September. Petr Cech drawing the balls, which was a nice little touch.
It was.
Ajax, Valencia, and Lille.
It's a good draw for us. I think we've got some. We haven't really got a top European team, you know, a top team. I think Valencia we should be able to do okay against.
I can practice my French against Lille.
Ajax have lost they lost three or four of their best players, and maybe they're not getting the same team they were. And to be honest, I don't know too much about Lille. I think they came fourth, didn't they?
They've got rid of Pepe, haven't they?
Yeah,
had to get rid of some decent players, Lille. Yeah. I think we're going to see some good games in this group. Often you see so much dross in these group stages of the Champions League, but I think this is a tasty group.
Very good group. And also, from a travelling perspective, we haven't got far to go, so it's not like we've got to go to, like, you know, Moscow in December.
I think it is, isn't it, 2 hours away nearly everything?
It's
going to Manchester, or it's going to Newcastle.
You get the US star to Amsterdam and to Lille. And nice easy
flight
to Valencia.
Of course, you can.
So you haven't got a fly.
God, I might even do that just overnight. Yeah, that'd be great.
I think it's a good group. I think it's a group we should advance from. But having said that, you look at all the teams in there. I mean, first or second this year may not necessarily be the be all and end all, because there's some really top teams in there. And if they all qualify, it's going to be, I don't, yeah, because you still have country protection until the quarterfinals.
Yes, of course you do, yeah.
So that'll be a real test when we get, you know, a top-notch European team.
I think
team.
We'll do well in Europe. I really do. I think we'll get through to the past quarterfinals.
I think that'll be a good start. I think, as we said before, you know, top four, good progression on the cups. That'll be a great season. Mm. And then a war chest, which is a lovely word. He's got a war chest of money to spend.
It's going to be so exciting, isn't it, when Chelsea can actually spend the big bucks again.
Apart from the rumours, yeah. It was great having a whole summer with Chelsea about signing. No, they're not, because they're not signing anyone.
It doesn't stop people from still posting on Twitter, Chelsea are signing. And you go, when is that going to happen then?
Ben Chilwell's a done deal, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never played Ajax, by the way, in a competitive fixture in the history of the football club. Interesting little stat, that. And Lille, some connections there. Give me the players that played
for
Joe Hart and Hazard. A couple of others. One other that I know of.
Era?
It's the mid-noughties.
Ben Ayew.
Mid to late noughties.
Oh,
a bit later than that, actually. Sorry.
Melt shot.
No. He, position? He was a striker. Late noughties, Kessler. Early.
Ben Zahar?
No. Ivorian, I believe.
Kalou.
Yeah. Solomon Kalou.
Yes.
And also, they signed Timothy Weah this summer, son of George.
PSG.
Yeah, what happened with George Weah at Chelsea? This is a story I've always wanted to know about, as to why it didn't quite work out.
He came in on loan, got the winner against Spurs, and that he thought, job done.
He was 39, I think, as well.
My dad said, I said to him, oh, we signed George Weah. And how old is he? 35? Went, 35 plus VAT.
Yeah. He scored. He played in the cup final.
Yeah, he played the cup final.
Dude, he scored.
He got a few goals.
Right.
He went to Man City for a bit, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was a bit like getting Eto.
He was a bit past it.
Yeah,
what I loved about Eto was the fact that he was so obviously not quite up to it, that he would do those sort of mischievous tricks, like hiding behind the goal and then running out and then standing in front of the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper would think, where do you come from?
Eto was a bit of a cult signing when we signed him. I thought he was just really good, wasn't it? Man United hat trick.
Yeah.
Just really good to have him.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got a name for you, gents. I wanted to bring this up on this show because this might show me to not know enough about football, but I like, you know, I pride myself on my 90s and noughties knowledge. I was watching your classic Premier League goal shows earlier in the week on Sky Sports, and a name cropped up that I'd kind of forgotten about, but also couldn't remember either. You scored a great goal for Chelsea. Sam Dalabona.
Yes.
Crikey O'Reilly.
Yeah.
There's one from the archives.
Sam Dalabona went back to AC Milan. finished off at Atalanta, I think, didn't he?
He didn't show a great desire to play for Chelsea.
He was signed with a fullback called Luca Picassi.
Yeah.
He never really got anywhere with the club. And he had a few good games under Ranieri.
He seemed to be the favourite of Ranieri in situations, as was the terrible Kike de Lucas.
Kike de Useless.
Yes, yeah. And our friend Jokanović.
Joke on the pitch.
Yeah.
Who was
appalling.
He was appalling. I think he was a good player, but the Premier League was too fast for him.
Yeah.
Di Matteo did his awful injury and we signed.
Della Bonna, though, would come on and look good in spurts, but wasn't actually good enough.
That good.
You know. It's these players that fascinate me in the Premier League, more so than the players that stay at clubs for so long. It's these players that have just their fleeting romances with the Premier League that, had I not seen that goal, I would never, ever
have remembered
him at all until either I saw the goal or someone mentioned him to me.
I think as supporters, seeing them all the time, you don't forget them. Mm. And it was, I remember somebody once saying to me, that Della Bonna, he was good. Why did we let him go? And I said, did you actually watch him during the season? No, I didn't see him. I saw about four or five games. I said, well, you saw him on Match of the Day and scoring, but you didn't actually see him. I said, he kept giving the ball away. He kept being caught in possession. He kept giving up. I said, so that wasn't really. And then when he said he wanted to go to Milan, and we thought, well,
it was on a free.
Off you go then.
Yeah,
mate.
Off you go. And he never really.
They didn't do much there.
He went to Milan. He kind of dotted around Italian leagues for a bit.
Good players from the Premier League. Right, we are going to be looking ahead to the Sheffield United clash next. We're speaking to James Shield, from the writer for the Star.
This is Love Sport.
Yep, it is indeed the opposition view on Love Sport. Chelsea playing Sheffield United this weekend. An interesting one on this one, because this was Chelsea's first ever top flight match, was against Sheffield United.
And of course they were the cup finalists in 1915.
There you go. Yeah. So 7th of September 1907, cup finalists in 1915. Gatling gun, George Hiddleston.
Yeah.
There you go, making history.
Always had a soft spot for Sheffield United. Because always used to like Dean and Agana up front. It was like the proper strikers, those two.
Ah, yes, yeah. Brian Dean.
Yeah. Tony Agana.
Who inflicted defeat upon Chelsea in the first Premier League clash for Sheffield United at Stamford Bridge in 92. Right. I'm sure our guest on the line now, James Shield, probably remembers that. James Shield, Sheffield United correspondent and writer for The Star. How are you doing, James?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you. And you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Great to have you on. Do you remember that game, that first Premier League visit of Sheffield United to Chelsea in 1992?
I do remember that game. I was actually there, not in a working capacity, in a personal capacity.
In a supporting capacity.
I was there at the game. In a supporting capacity, that's right, yeah.
Excellent. Were you there for the 3-2? For the Brian Steen scoring in the last minute.
Mark Steen. Brian
Steen? Who was he?
Mark Steen.
Yeah, got it wrong. Because
the question, there used to be a really famous lady TV presenter who supported Sheffield United. I'm trying to think of her name. Don't know.
There's actually a few.
Well, this is about the time when Steen got the goal. She was sat two seats along from me. I can't think what her name was. I think Anna somebody, maybe.
Oh, no, I must admit, that doesn't ring a bell with me.
Yeah.
That doesn't ring a bell with me.
Yeah. No. Fair enough.
Showing my age or lack of it. Yeah. I don't know.
Is that when you had the kits with the strings on when you were sponsored by Lava, wasn't it? You had those kits with the strings on. Was that the one? Was that the kit?
That's the one. Yeah. That's the one. Yeah, around the neck, wouldn't it? Yeah, it must have been horrible to play in that. Yeah.
Well, James, that first game we mentioned there in 1992, Adrian Littlejohn and Brian Dean. It wasn't a bad start for Sheffield United in that inaugural Premier League season, was it? Especially for Brian Dean, who scored the first Premier League goal. It's not been bad this season. Not a bad return to the Premier League so far.
No, not at all. 4 points from three games. And I think probably more importantly from sort of Sheffield United's perspective is that they've actually not looked out of sorts. They've not looked out of place in any of those games. I mean, the points tally will sort of pretty much tell you that. But even last weekend when they were beaten by Leicester City at home, they'll have actually come off the pitch sort of feeling that, perhaps we really should have taken a little bit more from that game. Certainly, I think they could have easily come away with a draw. And I think that's why I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens tomorrow, because when they came up, they came up with this sort of very expansive style of play and this sort of quite strange system that Frank Lampard, when he was at Derby, used to eulogise about. We've not quite seen as much of the sort of the overlapping centre halves and the paired with the attacking wing-backs, which sounds like it should be absolute chaos.
Well,
James,
can I ask you about this? Because this is something we keep hearing about Sheffield United, and I get it. I get overlapping centre-backs. But for those who perhaps don't get it, can you just explain how this works and how it's come about, this system?
Well, it came about almost by sort of accident, really. I mean, Chris Wilder, despite having an absolutely sort of exceptional 3 years at Bramall Lane, got off to a pretty horrendous start, didn't win any of his first four games. And I know, having spoken to him at the time, he always sort of quite fancied playing three at the back, but he felt it was something that sort of his team was just going to drift into. And there was sort of almost sort of similarities at that time with Antonio Conte at Chelsea after that Arsenal game, where he came off the pitch after a game against Southend and just said, right, you know, forget that. We're going to go with this now. So what you'll actually see, or what you saw an awful lot of last season, I say we haven't seen as much of it this year, but I'll sort of get on to why I wonder if we'll see a little bit more of it tomorrow, is very often you will see the wing-back and his centre-half both reach the byline at the same time. It's an absolute overload. They've drilled it on the training ground. The number of times, actually, last season in particular, that you would see one wing-back cross the ball to the other wing-back as well, who was on the other flank, and, you know, it sort of, you know, would result in a goal or an opportunity. The amount of times you see the centre-halves actually provide an assist in and around the box as well is probably ridiculous, to be honest, for a team at this level. So they just sort of reined it in a little bit last week against Leicester City. And perhaps, as I say, although they've had a good start, perhaps that was the first game where you actually thought, you know, overawed is too strong a word, but I think they possibly gave the opposition a little bit too much respect. And I know that's something that they've talked about this week. I know when I've spoken to the players this week, that's something that they've sort of conceded themselves. So
James,
I just wonder if we'll see a little bit more tomorrow.
How did Derby do against Sheffield United last year?
It was two really good games, actually. Derby beat Sheffield United at Pride Park and probably deservedly beat them. And then when they came to Bramall Lane, Sheffield United sort of deservedly beat them, put three goals past them. So that was the point, though, of the season where Sheffield United had really sort of taken off and were sort of really sort of steamrolling towards that top two. But there wasn't an awful lot between the two sides. And I know Chris Wilder said this week, actually, that had Mason Mount not got injured for Derby at sort of a couple of key stages of the season, he thought they would have gone on possibly to push for the top two themselves. So it was two pretty sort of evenly balanced games, and I think probably the right result on both counts.
Do you remember how he set up, how Lampard set up against United?
Initially, if memory serves me correct, I must admit, because obviously there's so many games in the Championship, but sometimes, unless something ridiculous happens, they all tend to sort of morph into one
of course,
bit.
Yes.
It's, if I remember rightly, I think when they came to Bramall Lane, they might have actually tried to sort of match Sheffield United up. And that was something that you saw an awful lot of teams do, but invariably it didn't work. And then sort of they switched back to the usual formation. But by that time, the momentum was already with Sheffield United. Because, you know, there was this sort of strange thing going on where teams who hadn't practiced this system that Sheffield United have absolutely drilled on the training ground.
Yeah.
Every single day, would then try and copy it. And of course, you know, it just wasn't going to work as well.
That seemed to happen under when teams played against Conte in that season. They'd try and copy the three at the back, and they frequently wouldn't be able to sustain the impetus.
I mean, Sheffield United ahead of where people thought it would be under Wilder? I mean, the promotion to the Premier League must have been, was it unexpected or close to home was it expected?
I think in fairness, it possibly, yeah, I think they're ahead of the curve, as it were. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been two promotions in three seasons. I think they possibly expected, they privately fancied themselves to challenge for the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Because they'd gone close the year before, the first season back in the Championship. But it was just a sort of a lack of squad depth really exposed them then. They lost one of their better players when they were top of the table in November and went on a pretty sort of, not terrible run, but terrible by their standards run after that. But, you know, last season, I think that run-in, it really showed you actually what this Sheffield United side is about, because, of course, they ended up in a real dogfight for second place with Leeds. And, you know, there's not a great deal of love lost between the two clubs.
Same here, mate, to be honest.
You can imagine. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I'm sure there have been a few Chelsea fans cheering them on, to be honest. So, but it was, I think what saw Sheffield United get across the line was, they can play football. Yes, they've got this style that we've just spoken about. But they've got this wonderful sort of chemistry behind the scenes where you've got a Sheffield United fan and a dyed-in-the-wool blade as a manager.
Yeah, and Billy Sharp as well.
And exactly the same, you're right, as captain of the football club as well. And they really sort of galvanised the squad, and they showed an awful lot of grit and determination and just sort of real, real mental toughness at a time when Leeds didn't, to be honest.
I mean, who are the players to watch out for tomorrow in terms of who should be sort of, you know, who's going to be the stars of the show?
I think the stars of the show, I mean, I think Ollie McBurnie, their record signing, will start tomorrow. He's started every game on the bench so far, but he scored last week against Leicester City, so I'll be interested to see how he goes on. I think the names to watch almost for the future are, there's one of those centre-halves, Jack O'Connell, who used to play at Brentford, actually, but didn't really get a look in there. He's come on leaps and bounds since he came to Sheffield United, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if at some point over the next year or so, if he carries on in the same vein, that he either begins to sort of attract attention from some clubs higher up the food chain, or even possibly get on the cusp of the England squad. Mm-hmm. He really is that good. So I think he's one. He's possibly not the sexiest of players, if you get my drift, in terms of what he's going to do, but I think he's one to really look out for tomorrow.
James, you mentioned Ollie McBurnie there. We've also mentioned Billy Sharp as well. Is there? I mean, we know that Billy Sharp has scored goals in the Championship. He scored one on the opening day of the season. Ollie McBurnie got opened his account last week against Leicester. There is David McGoldrick, and there is Lys Mousset, who came in from Bournemouth as well, who, as a Premier League player, hasn't really pulled up any trees yet. Is there any concern about a lack of firepower for the Blades up top?
Do you know what? There may well be from sort of the outside looking in, because the one thing they don't have a great deal of course, is sort of Premier League experience. But I think the way they play, they do create an awful lot of chances, and certainly so far they've created more clear-cut chances than possibly you would expect a team that's just been promoted from the Championship to do. So they're very, very positive. I mean, yes, listen, goals are going to be a lot tougher to come by in the Premier League. That goes without saying for Sheffield United. But personally, just with the way they play, I don't really look at that and sort of see that as a real concern, to be honest. I think in a strange sort of way, and this is going to sound stupid, but I think the toughest thing for this group of players, I think the biggest challenge they're going to face in the Premier League this season is actually learning how to lose. Not liking it, but learning how to lose, because it's something they've not really done an awful lot of for the past 3 years.
Yeah, and good to see Ravel Morrison as well getting minutes in the week in the Carabao Cup. Just before you go, James, a quick score prediction, if you will.
Oh, dear me. I honestly doubt that. Do you know what? I'm just going to sit on the fence and just say it to all.
Nice. I like that. James Shield, Sheffield United correspondent and writer for The Star.
Thank you, James.
Thank you very much for joining us. Right, plenty more coming up on the Chelsea Fan Show. We're going to be discussing those comments from James Shield and looking ahead to that clash with the Blades.
Love Sport.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, joined by the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Jonathan Kidd and Dan Silva. We've got about 8 minutes or so left, chaps. So we're going to look ahead to that game against Sheffield United tomorrow. 3 p.m. kickoff. Can Frank get back-to-back wins?
Yes, I think he can. I think it's the bounce from the Norwich game, the crowd. I think we dominate a lot of games. I think
if they play as well as that, they play with the pace and they play with the pattern that they do, and they don't give away goals on the on the counter attack. Yeah. But it's interesting to hear what James was saying about United. They may play a pattern that falls easily for us to counter attack.
Are they going to completely change game plan, come and sit back and then hope for the best? Yeah. Or are they going to be just, as they say, progressive football, they've gotten promoted and hope for the best? I mean, I think the Leicester game was a bit of an anomaly because after the midweek game in Turkey and what have you. So I think we're very tired after 60 minutes. I think if we can maintain the same level of performance we did against Norwich, I think we should
probably come away with a win.
Which is very pacey and requires a great deal of fitness.
Which is, second half, we did slow down a bit, I think.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, that first 45 minutes was just relentless.
It was relentless.
Yeah.
But I think lots of teams won't be able to stay with us if we play that with that commitment.
The press.
The press. It's the dealing with with the counter is the major problem. So
hopefully we can kind of...
They've just got to improve, haven't they, really?
Rudy might get game time, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think you put him on the bench, actually. I think that's what seems to be the case. I'm not even convinced Kante's going to play.
He's not. I think
he's been ruled out.
And he's been ruled out already. And he's not been called up to French squad, which is great.
He's got
2 weeks to rest.
Yeah.
There's no chance of point risking him.
Yeah.
I think we're 3-1, I think. I think we'll have enough. If we get an early goal, I think we can really...
I think it'll be 3-2 again.
Yeah.
I think they'll press and we'll score the three. I think we're good at scoring goals. I think, which I can't believe I'm saying, considering that was one of the problems we were worried about.
Without a striker, apparently.
Yeah.
A top striker, should we say?
And it'd be interesting to see if Batshuayi's on the bench.
I think he'd be on the bench.
I think he will be as another
two
option.
Two strikers, because he gives him a chance to go two up top if he needs to.
Yeah.
What are we thinking about Michy Batshuayi this season, gents? What is Michy Batshuayi now for Chelsea?
He is a goal scorer, nothing more. Various people have said that he lacks game intelligence. He's very hard to coach, not because he's disruptive, but he's thick, basically, from what we understand. He knows where the goal is.
I was going to be slightly more subtle with it, but
knows where the goal is.
He's the sharpest tool in the box.
Yeah, he's a poacher. Expression. I mean, some of the goals he's getting for Marseille, for Dortmund, the goals he's got for us have all been poachers' goals. I mean, the goal at West Brom that won us the league, making a run across, that's a, you know, we create a chance to put the ball in the net, because the amount of times previous seasons we've had great runs, great crosses, there's been no one in the 6-yard box trying to like gobble them up. He's like our Francis Jeffers.
He should have played him instead of Higuain last year.
I don't know, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, the fox in the box.
The fox in the box, of course, always gets labelled to Francis Jeffers and what he was all about, but we soon learned that what he was all about wasn't that much in the Premier League.
A dud in the box.
Yeah, he absolutely was. I mean, in terms of records against newly promoted sides, I think it's just 3 games at home of the 80 that you've played, Chelsea have lost to newly promoted sides. So there's a good record there. And Frank Lampard obviously has a good record himself as a player against newly promoted sides.
Yeah. I think renewed Chelsea, you know, on the bounce from last week, gained the international break. I think there's going to be enough. We should have enough for Sheffield United. I mean, they've done very well. This is who they play. They're Leicester, Villa, haven't they?
Well, they're not to be underestimated.
No, but this is their first real test.
I think this is going to be an interesting test. Yeah. I just think if they play as well as they did, especially in the first 45 minutes, Chelsea will take them to the cleaners, particularly in the first few minutes. And I think that at the moment, that seems to be the first 10 minutes is when we've been our most potent. Yeah, if you score two or three times, that's it. Mm. Yeah.
I think what I love about the start to Chelsea's season so far is that everything we talked about in the summer, if Frank Lampard was to take the job, is happening. Everybody talked about a new identity at Chelsea. Frank Lampard being able to put his stamp on this squad. 4 goals this season in the Premier League, all been scored by Englishmen. I mean, you can't underestimate how important that is, right?
Yeah, I think having an English spine in the English Premier League is really important. I think, you know, they get the game. Or people have got a real connection to the club, affinity to the club, which these players have got. And I think that makes a huge difference. They're not kind of mercenaries, is a strong word, but they're not just here for the dollar. They get the club, they want to succeed, they want to be hungry, they want to be putting on a Chelsea shirt. And the man in charge, Frank, I mean, Frank is arguably Chelsea's greatest ever player. Incredible history, incredible everything about him. And he's such an articulate, bright, progressive manager.
Being articulate and being a PR dream.
Well,
I'm saying it's really much part of it.
I mean,
it's part of the image, the part of the process of actually pushing Chelsea into the next decade
as a global brand.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's a dreadful thing to say, but nonetheless, he's so competent on camera and at dealing with any question given to him.
Yeah, and he's just given up football, so he gets the whole. All these kids on stupid money, he knows what it's all about because he's only just given up the game. So he gets the whole new breed of footballers.
You mustn't estimate the fact that Morris with him is also
involved
in the youth side.
Jody Morris, I was on another debate show, and Jody Morris and Joe Woods are so key, the integration of these youth players, because they've seen them all pretty much from, 12 or 13, so they know them. Like I said about Callum Hudson-Odoi, he's a great player, technically superb, but mentally not quite ready yet. Which is fine because he's 19 years old. Joe gets them, they've coached them since they were kids, so they know everything about them, you know, how to motivate them, the weak spots, so on and so forth. So I think it's going to be a fascinating season. And Peter Cech's upstairs, McAlealy's come back.
I'm still not quite sure what Peter Cech's role is, but
he's a figurehead. Ashley Cole's probably coming back to the under-15s. And this is thing about Chelsea, Ashley Cole, who was, you know, pretty much like an Arsenal boy, is now coming back to coach at Chelsea, which is, it shows that.
And we got, Arsenal didn't treat him very well, though, did he, when he, when he returned to
only 60
Highbury,
grand, only 60 grand a week. I mean, oh, dear. Yes. I'd just drive my car off the road for that as well.
Do you think that Frank will keep it the same as to what he did last week? No changes?
I think if everyone's fit, it'll be the same team, I think.
It depends, is Pedro
Pedro's not fit. Pedro, but a couple of weeks.
In which case, I think he'll play Pulisic and Mount on the wing, and Barkley will come into the middle again.
Or who else can you bring in? Doesn't bring in Barkley.
Instead of Barkley?
Yeah.
There isn't anybody, is there?
Well, you've got Willian, obviously, coming off the bench, potentially. Yeah. He could play. But I do think that he'll... I think what these midfielders have got as well now is a chance to stake their claim, because Kante's going to come back in. Without a doubt, he's going to be, you know, he's the number one midfielder, first name on the team sheet. So it's now a case of Jukovic, Barkley, Willian, everybody else to actually stake their claim to be the man alongside him. Along with Jorginho as well, who you would imagine is also going to be one of the first names if he continues playing like he has done.
It's going to be tricky for him. He may just pick teams according to the opposition as well. He might think along those lines.
I think you have a core six or seven, like, you know, the untouchables, just purely because you need that. You need like a six or seven players that aren't going to be changed regularly unless they get injured, and then fit the others around it.
It's interesting what happens when James comes back as to whether there's a doubt on Azpilicueta playing.
I think from what Frank's been saying about Reece James, I think he'll get game time pretty quickly, and if he stands up, he'll get Azpi will become
interesting that Azpi might not be in the team after that.
Don't think so. Azpi everyone says centre half. Azpi is too short for centre half.
Why would he do that when he's got Christensen and Rudiger?
Well, also he was great in the three under Conte. But the amount of times like Dele Alli when we lost to Spurs, just coming in behind him. But yeah, you know, Azpi's had been a brilliant centre for us. He's a great player to have around, you know, for Champions League nights and so on and so forth. His lack of pace is less, you know, obvious. I think Reece James will be in the team by Christmas.
And of course, Emerson has been beyond all expectation.
Well, the player he was, yeah. Now he's fully fit. Yeah.
Indeed, he has. Right, fellas, quick prediction before we go.
3-1.
3-2.
3-2, 3-1.
Because I remember I got it right last week, so it's 3-2 again.
Brilliant. Okay. You are a good omen, Jonathan Kidd. This has been the Chelsea Fan Show on Lost Sport with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Jonathan Kidd and Dan Silva. Chelsea could go into the international break in the top four with a victory against the Blades. How very exciting. We'll see you next week, same time, same place on Lost Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.